Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning, Keith. Tronix, how are you?
I am doing pretty good. Yeah, it's been an interesting week. It's been a long time since I went to a conference, and that's what I was doing last week. So kind of just getting back into the swing of things.
How was ChefConf? Did you learn how to cook?
It was actually really good. I don't know why I said actually. Like, I thought it was going to be bad or something, but it was a different experience. It's my first time going to a conference where I'm, you know, part of a sponsor team, right? So like, we had a booth, Linux Academy did. So every time, and the expo hours were weird. Like, you know, when you go to a lot of conferences, like there's the hallway track and there's just the sponsors are standing there for 10 hours a day.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not how ChefConf worked. It was at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago, which is enormous. So like, I'm like, I didn't realize the hotels had, you know, three basement levels for as a conference center. That was an interesting experience for me, but
you're on B2.
Yeah. It was between B2 and three most of the time. So good times there, but like escalators just, you know, until I was way too far into the ground. But the expo was only open for certain hours. So when it was open, I would just hang out in our booth and talk to people. And that was pretty cool. Got to interact with a lot of Linux Academy students. Got to kind of A-B test my sort of like sales pitch on content to sort of see what types of content got people excited and what they were really interested to learn. So it was a really good learning experience in that way.
So how'd you do that?
I just give them I talked to hundreds of people throughout the thing probably. Mm-hmm. And I would just change what I emphasized when I was talking to them and just gauge their reaction.
And so scientific.
It was pretty good, right? It's all intuition all the time, but
that's good, man.
Yeah. It turns out it verified the ideas that I kind of had going into it. And that will just help me creating content moving forward. But beyond just like the Linux Academy specific stuff, the conference was really good. It did have like really insanely long keynotes. Like the keynote was longer than WWDC's keynote. And there were two of them. So there was one each day, right?
Did they have two more things?
Yeah, they did. They had all the things. So many people came out on stage. It was very much felt like WWDC's sort of keynote.
Like, hey, I'm the MC, and these are the people that are doing some things.
Exactly. And then so they would come out and give their spiel, and there would be some live coding stuff. Had a couple like just demonstration sort of things that turned out better than I would have expected. Like things actually went smoothly. So that was good. But yeah, learned some things. And most of all, it was nice just to interact with the chef community, which is really awesome. That everybody is super nice. Like, you know, Ruby has the whole Matt's is nice, so we are nice mantra. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ruby people in general seem to be less nice than chef people as a whole, even though it's like a subset, right? Like, I've had more awkward, like sort of aggressive interactions with people at just going to small Ruby conferences than I did going to this very large, specific conference.
Well, some of that was, not all their fault.
Hey, Hey, don't pin this on me. That was my bad, the one that you're talking about. But yeah, I acknowledge that one.
That's cool. Did you when you're at the booth, did you have people put in their business cards into a fishbowl and give away a drone?
So we did not give away a drone. We tried to. We actually have a it's like a floating Death Star, like Bluetooth speaker, hovers around or whatever. So that was a giveaway thing we were doing, and the dude who won it just never showed up. So it'll go into the next conference.
It's on your desk. It's on your desk.
No, there's way too much stuff on my desk because we're moving. So I look like I'm living in an episode of Hoarders. Like things are boxed up and it's just all in my office.
Like, dude, get rid of it. Get rid of it.
We did. Like, I'm not going to go into this because it doesn't really have anything to do with podcasts, but the amount of stuff in our apartment has changed drastically. So there's a lot less, but the stuff we do have is in boxes and it's surrounding my office. So
nice. Ooh, it's like a fort. It's like
a fort. Exactly. Exactly. I just need to string up some blankets and then I'll be good to go.
Dude, get a flashlight, get some books. Yeah. Did you tell people about your chef's Chef Sucks website at ChefCon.
I did tell a couple people who worked for Chef about it, how I used to own that domain, and how it was more or less, and I talked to him about this, was just that I had come into Chef, I didn't really know it, and at that time, Chef has gone through a lot of like paradigm shifts throughout its existence and the way people sort of did things. And at that time, I came into like a Chef repository that had vendored all of its cookbooks, and it was really hard to figure out like where some of these cookbooks were even used. I was like, we don't use CouchDB, we don't use Erlang, why do we have these two cookbooks? And so like, when there are hundreds of thousands of lines of code in your Chef repo that don't have anything to do with what you're doing, you can imagine that you're going to run into problems. So I ran into that. And then we also had, for a reason that I am unaware of, we had problems with like Chef clients failing the first time, and then they would pass the second time. And like, so like, obviously there was an ordering thing in there, or I say obviously, but that would be my assumption, is that there was a recipe set up wrong somewhere. But so that just got me super frustrated, because it would happen like, on a, you know, it was a reoccurring basis, but it wasn't consistent, and it was just driving me nuts. So I explained that that was my aggravation. Now I actually am a pretty big fan of Chef. I like what they're doing, and
nice.
Yeah, so that was cool. But some of the other things that Chef has that I've never really understood, I mean, InSpec, I understand that's like a testing framework for testing the configuration of servers, which can be used on any server. Like, you could point it to a production server that you have a SSH access to, and it can run a test suite on the configuration to make sure everything is set up properly. That's nice. Pretty cool. Habitat is another product that Chef makes that I didn't really get when it first like was announced. And so sitting through keynotes and a couple other things, now I get it. It's a way of like, similar to how you can package up applications in a Docker image and make it really easy to run with Docker, Habitat allows you to create a what's called a heart file from basically any sort of application. And then you can run that basically anywhere. So you can run it on bare metal, you can run it inside of a Docker image, you can set it up for Kubernetes pretty easily using some stuff that they ship with it. So getting to see that in action actually got me pretty excited. And it's something that I'm going to talk about when I talk about what I'm going to do over the next sprint to give us continuous deployment.
Nice. Cool. Well, you want to hop into what else you've been doing?
Yeah, might as well jump in on my completed. So ChefConf is like half of my thing, because I was gone for a week. And then the other half will be working with Chronic and the workflow stuff. I basically went through and kind of figured out what I was doing with all the database side of things. Turns out how I had been like, oh yeah, it's really awesome in Elixir to be able to test things without really needing to worry about the database. That did mean I needed to come up with how to actually interact with the database on other things. So that led me down like, okay, how am I going to create a workflow that has, or workflow template to store that has its own steps and has its own integrations and make sure all that stuff works. So it was basically an exercise in learning more about Ecto. And eventually got that figured out. But then my pull request was really huge. So you and I agreed that we could just call it where it was, and then I could integrate it into the API in a separate pull request. So that was what I did last time. I didn't end up going through and adding a ton of documentation like I was kind of hoping. The tests kind of do a good job of it, which is one of those weird things. But the tests would be too big for me to work them into doc tests, which kind of sucks. So yeah, workflow, the back end of it is pretty much done, needs to be utilized in the API, and then that needs to make its way into the clients. But you and I have kind of planned, we're not going to replace the timer endpoint that we currently have within events, or the timer messages, I guess, just yet. We're going to just kind of add workflow separately, and then we can decide whether or not we want to remove the timer stuff later.
Right. Yep. What do you have planned for the next few weeks then?
The big one will be I guess I don't know if it's really the big one, but it's going to be writing that workflow event system into the API. So it's where you can say, send a message that is like workflow start with some sort of ID, and it will know how to, you know, load that from the database and kick that off. And then also I'm going to, like I said, probably use Habitat to create continuous deployment for us so that I don't have to worry about manually deploying the API every time we make a change. And
yeah,
I don't think it's actually going to be that hard. Like, I spent time, you know, learning Habitat and interacting with people who know a lot about it, from just like friends that I have now that work at Chef, and just talking to other people. And it's with the scripts that I had already kind of written to do the manual deployment, I can kind of work that into what Habitat calls its plan. So that's how you specify these things within your repo, which is really nice too. So it's not like I have to set it up inside of CodeShip or something. It's I set up our plan file that specifies like, okay, here's what you do when you're like building the HARP file. Here's what you do when you actually go to run it. And it's all just like it's shell scripts with hooks, more or less. So the shell scripts that I already have, I can just work them into hooks in our plan file. And it should, in theory, work the same way that it's already working with the hot code reloading that we've got.
So where would this CI live?
So Habitat has this its own system that's currently free even for public stuff called Builder. And it can...
Even for private stuff?
Yeah, even for private stuff. So you can... Like in our CI, I would probably adjust our CI workflow to go through, run all the tests and do that jazz. And then I could have it build the HARP file and upload that to Builder. And then when something is uploaded, it's kind of crazy how this works. But so you run Habitat's like it has a supervisor tree that you can run on like within a container or on bare metal. And you tell it the HARP file to run and then it will go and run that. And the HARP file specifies like how it's supposed to run and be built and all that stuff. But what happens is when you promote something to being the new, like, I don't know what term they use. I'm not sure if it's promote to master, promote to stable, something like that within Builder. You promote it right there. And then the supervisors that are looking on that channel of HARP files will notice that there is was a new one created, and it will pull down and do a rolling restart on the node. So you don't have to push out the new application. It actually pulls itself down.
Do they have hooks into like GitHub and everything for the checks API, stuff like that?
For the checks API.
Yeah. So, you know, we have protected branches for pull requests and, you know, hey, this check passed, that CI passed.
Oh, that would be on us, right? So like, we would have this set up in CI to, like when master is built, it would know that, okay, I'm ready to build a HARP file and produce that. So that would be on us. That's part of the, so it's not there for continuous integration, which is running your checks, running your tests, promoting thing to branches. It's not part of that. It's this really just part of the deployment for and deployment? Packaging.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, their goal is deploy any app anywhere is what their goal is. And it really, like, once you kind of see how it works, you're like, okay, I can see how this could do it.
Yeah, that seems pretty, like, generic and, like, yeah,
can yeah, handle anything. Once you see it, you'll be like, oh, this is actually pretty simple. Like, it's not nearly as complicated as I would have thought. It's got its own kind of nuances to it, but it'll be pretty neat, and you and I'll sit down and we'll talk about it once I actually get it finished.
Nice.
Well, cool. I think you've been up to more than I have.
Well, I didn't go to a conference.
That's true.
Yeah, I did a lot of work on Chronic over the last few weeks. Namely, I got the web app to start, pause, and resume on the website. Sweet. Using our existing API. And actually, I followed, you know, pretty much what you had for. So we're using React Native for the mobile side. And I pretty much copied the spirit of your actions in reducers, made a little subtle changes, but the like overall structure was there. So that's good because we did talk about in the beginning, like sharing those actions and reducers. And I don't think there's going to be a problem sharing those.
Cool.
The other thing I found was I'm working on another React project for a client, and I was talking to somebody that does a lot of React web and did a project where they did some React Native stuff, and they would share components, some higher, it's a loaded term, but some higher order components, and some containers. So, or most containers and some low-level components. So, an example is like if you want to render a text field in React Native, right? It's a view/text field or whatever. And if you want to render that same thing in React, it's an input field.
Yep.
So, when you get to that point of where you have to render that is where you can say, hey, I'm on mobile, render this component. Oh, I'm on web render this component. And I don't know exactly how they had their repo set up. So I want to talk to them more about that. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have like a, a base repo that you import these from? You know, do you bring these in through NPM? I don't know how they're doing it. So I want to talk more about that. But I think we could probably share a lot of our components and structure, which would be nice.
Yeah, anything that doesn't kind of round out to being a DOM element, I think, you know, you could put that in. Those are containers, right? The things that contain the logic. Okay, yeah. I know there's...
Yeah, they contain the this is also... This is whatever anybody thinks it is. But the way I've grown to know is containers are pretty much like they grab all your data through state, whatever, API calls or whatever. And then they pass that data through props into your components. So your components just are working with props and they don't really make any data manipulation calls. They pass up events back up through them to the containers and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're just pure rendering.
Correct. Okay. And those are the things that would be specific to your platform, right?
Yep, and that makes sense.
Yeah. So I plan on the next 2 weeks talking to him and getting our projects set up so that we can kind of implement that. I think that'll be pretty rad.
Yeah, that sounds great because that's just like... And it feels like an exponential return on investment when you can build it once and kind of run it everywhere. I mean, which I guess is kind of the idea with a lot of this stuff, which is why React Native sort of became a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm interested. So the next step with the mobile side is refactoring some of those things. Basically, the React mobile or website, I'm sorry if I said mobile, but the website. Was basically just thrown together as a proof of concept and kind of threw in some UI elements for future for workflow use, actually. So some of that code is just kind of thrown in there. There's no really structure around it. So that's kind of the next step for me is to like get those moved into components and containers, get the actual component names down, and get the structure correct. And then also add some tests because, like I said, we were just kind of throwing together some stuff. Mm-hmm.
I don't think the mobile app has any tests. I mean, I might have some tests for the reducers, maybe.
Nope.
I really don't.
No. The web. I'm sorry. You said mobile. Jeez.
Yeah.
The mobile side does have tests.
Right? Oh, okay.
For the reducers and actions. Yeah. So the website. I want to add some tests to that and get CI set up. The other thing I did is I kind of experimented with like alerting system in the web side so that you can know like when you're connected, when something successfully, like when you started a timer, pause the timer, all that stuff. And our idea is there to like kind of give you information about the next workflow thing that's coming up. So it'll say things like, hey, your next timer is a break or whatever.
Okay.
So, experimented with a little bit with that. I'm not really happy how it turned out, but we can talk about that later.
I haven't gotten around to reviewing those pull requests just yet. So,
yep, you got two pull requests out there. So, that's pretty much what I've been wanting to do with Chronic for a couple. I mean, my last commit to Chronic was like 6 weeks ago or something like that. So. Or like 2 months ago.
It was kind of a sad like Git log for me. I was like, okay, what was I doing? And I go, good Lord, that date. It's back there. It's been a while.
Back there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're close to like getting our mobile and web timers hooked, you know, and starting to work like a real application. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, this project's been a good example of kind of like, okay, what does it look like to build a project when it's like really not your primary focus? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we're super busy doing other things all the time. So I was like, okay, what's it look like to start like a non-trivial programming project and try to ship this over time? Well, it takes way longer than you think it's going to take.
Right. And we purposely did that. Like, we're like, you know, we know this is the, like, let's not put stress on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets done when it gets done, and there's really no, you know, artificial deadline that we're putting on to this stuff, which actually I work better with deadlines.
Yeah, I think most people do. I mean, yeah, that's Parkinson's law kind of in effect.
Yeah, so I just, you know, I put my own deadlines on the things that I want to get done. And then I've been also kind of experimenting with like weeks of stuff. So I have so many like projects going on, which I'm actually trying to reduce. So like I'll say, hey, this week I'm only going to concentrate on Chronic. This week I'm only going to concentrate on Tetsu. And that seems to be kind of working really well.
Nice.
Yeah. The other things, you know, I've been working on a new talk. I have two new talks coming up, and one is, talking about a bot framework that I have yet to build.
Nice.
It's been in my head for a while, and I've like, you know what? I'm not going to build this until I actually get this accepted. So I have to build a bot framework in Elixir in about a month and a half. Mm-hmm. So I've been starting to, think about what that looks like and how that's going to play out, and drew some nice diagrams and things. So, I don't think it's going to be too hard to build the base framework. I've obviously been working in the bot land for a while now, so I kind of know what it needs to do and what needs to happen. And Elixir is kind of the perfect language for a bot framework. I mean, it was built on Erlang, which is a communication framework. So, or built for the communication industry. So like Elixir is like a perfect framework for this. So I'm pretty excited to, I'm going to start working on that in my next sprint. And getting some of the pieces that I need for that built.
Nice.
I'm calling it Juve.
Okay. Yeah. I saw that in the notes here and I was like, okay, what is that? I don't even know what that's about. So what's the overall topic of your talk? Is it like my journey building a bot framework?
Well, no, it's more about, so I've given a talk about building bots in Ruby, because Tetsu is built in Ruby. And half of the talk is structured on what makes a good bot, like, and what are some of the design challenges and how do you overcome some of those design challenges? Because you mostly talk about conversational UIs and all that stuff. So, and then the second half of that talk is, hey, how do you get started in Ruby building this? Not really around a framework, but what are some of the raw pieces? Mm-hmm. And that's really what this talk is going to be as well. It's like, why, you know, what makes a good bot? Why do we even care? What's the hype? All that shit.
Okay. So is Juve a framework or is it going to be a bot example? Correct.
It's going to be a framework.
Okay.
It is a framework. It's going to be a framework. Yeah. And it's going to be a framework that connects not only to Slack, but you know, Amazon, Microsoft Teams, all that stuff.
Okay.
Probably only for the talk, it will be Slack, but it's built with the, with like a simplicity of like a web MVC framework in mind. Mm-hmm. So I have an idea of like a controller and a router based on conversations, so that you end up at a controller and an action and you have the context around, you know, available in that controller action. So okay. What's the bot, what's the user, what's the team, what's your conversational history. And that way you can just easily have these endpoints of where you end up in your conversation within these controller actions.
Okay. So did you ever use Lita?
No, I have not. I've looked at it, but I have not used it.
Gotcha. It felt like, I mean, it had a similar like routing structure. Like you could say, oh, when you receive this sort of message type, like you would use messages as routes, right? So you're like, if it looked like it matches this regex, because that's all routing is at the end of the day, right?
Right.
If it matches this regex, route it to this handler. And then that handler, you could specify like, okay, I need these like pieces of state out of somewhere. And then here are some the methods that you could call. It was actually pretty slick. We when I was working at SquareMouth, we used Lita for quite a few things. And some of the bots that the guys on the team created were like really cool. Like they did some really neat things. And the code was interesting. You need a reason about using Lita.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of... there's a lot of like online conversational UI builders that are kind of similar to that. Although it's all in like a GUI framework. Mm-hmm. But yeah, once, you know, here's my flow of this conversation and how it looks. And when I get to this point in my conversation, you know, if they say yes to this question, I want to do this. If they say no, I want to branch off into this area.
Okay, that it wouldn't handle, right? Lita is made to handle like commands, which is the big difference. Yeah. But like the structure could be the same. Like, you know a lot more about bots, so I'm sure you're seeing like, okay, I can have this routing that's like doing things based on previous inputs and stuff like that, maybe.
Exactly.
Works out well with an Elixir model because you can keep that stuff in the process state.
Yep. And everything, all the bots are their own process. Mm-hmm. It's just a perfect kind of scenario.
So wait, are you going to have, this is seriously getting into the weeds of, is your bot process going to be like a supervisor?
Probably. And then there's probably going to be a supervisor above that.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Cause kind of status of all bots, right?
Yeah. Cause I'm seeing like, okay, you have a bot for, let's say you have a bot per organization, right? Like Slack wise, it would be an app. So you have this bot, but individually you want it to be used by more than one person. So you would have conversations be its own like process potentially that's managed by the bot.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, exactly. Cool. Nice.
Cool. So my first task with that is pretty much building up the connection portion of that. So I'm making like a generic connection that can connect to Slack and then Slack has their own kind of different ways to connect to it. So they have the RTM, they have events, API. And so there's different things within Slack on different ways to connect to Slack. So that's kind of my first piece, is to kind of create those connections. So that's hopefully what I'm going to work on next week.
Cool.
As far as Chronic for the next time, I want to work on the stuff I've already kind of talked about with the web API or the web interface. And then I'd like to pair with you and get like some of the GraphQL implementation that we've talked about with our API, and it might be a good time to do it like soon because of the workflow stuff.
Yeah.
Like we might as well just get that using GraphQL.
Sounds good to me. We just need to get something on the schedule.
Yeah. And then the other thing I'd like to do with you is kind of talk about our UI and how that's going to work and look and how that works with integrations and all that stuff. How it works on mobile, how it works on the web, things like that. So we should probably schedule some stuff.
Yeah, sounds good. I, maybe I'll have to find some time to make it up to Toledo, and then we'll find some time to work on this.
Nice.
Good deal.
Cool, man. Anything else going on?
Not that I can think of. Yeah, like I said, we're moving. So as the house is finishing being built, we're dealing with a lot of stuff there. So that's kind of
when's that supposed to be done, or when are you supposed to be moved? Do you have like an actual like move in date?
We don't have an official date. It's probably first week of July though, so we're about a month away.
Man, and you already have your fort built?
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna have to move the box fort, but yeah, my Kendra is insanely good at like planning and stuff, and she knows that if we wait too long, she's gonna get really stressed out as we like pack in a mad frenzy. I'm much more just like, oh no, just let me get all hopped up on caffeine and we'll box all this stuff up in 25 minutes. Like that's more my my approach to moving, I think. But she's a little more prepared than me, so yeah, we already have stuff that we know we're not going to use all boxed up and ready to go.
Nice. Yeah, I've been getting my basement worked on to be like my new office, because it had like I explained this in a previous episode, but it had like a drop down ceiling and like office-y looking like lights and stuff.
Yeah.
So I hired some contractors. They like build out the framing and drywall and put in some nice LED lighting and stuff. So it's actually just got done like last week.
Sweet.
Last week. So yeah, I just have to do the painting. I freaking hate painting. And then I'll have a brand new fancy office
that you can build your own box for then.
That's, dude, I'm going to start sketching designs right now.
There you go. All right, dude. Well, I guess I will talk to you hopefully before 2 weeks so that we can get some stuff on the books to sit down in person and talk through some things. But yeah, it's been a nice chat.
All right, man. Talk to you
later.